going to talk this morning on the power of silence. How to develop the power of silence. The great sages tell us that silence is the ultimate source of all power and energy. The ancient sages have declared that God is the great silence. So first of all, I should like to explain some of the aspects of the power of silence. And then I shall proceed to discuss the method, the way of cultivating the power of silence, the different stages in the accumulation of the power of silence in our personality. Because that is indeed the great secret of spiritual living, more and more accumulating the illuminative power, the creative power of silence. There is a very beautiful chapter in one of the Upanishads, the title of which is Maunam Brahma, which means God is the great silence. So I shall come to that later. But first of all, let us consider the different aspects of the power of silence. Today, of course, as we look around, we find that there is very little realization among people about this power of silence. The fact is just the opposite. People are trying to kill silence in all possible ways. They're trying to kill silence. You see, not only there are all kinds of noise around us, in the streets and different places, below and above, we are not even quite, satisfied with that much of noise, we carry noise in our pockets nowadays. See, you go to the public bus, you find that people are carrying their small pocket radio, exposing themselves all the time to some kind of noise. You go to the public park, you go to the beach, people come there for relaxation, to have an opportunity of silent communion maybe with nature or with their own self. But even though they go to these places, well, they are not prepared, they are not ready for cultivating silence. The opposite. They carry radio there and try to make all kinds of noise. That is really very unfortunate. That is a symptom of the growing rise of materialism and technological civilization. But that is all the more reason why we should pay some attention to the value of science and have some areas of life at least in which we can enter into silent communion with the ultimate ground of existence, the ultimate source of life, which is silence. Now, there are different aspects of the power of silence. First of all, silence is illuminative. It is the source of illumination. So in explaining this point, that silence is illuminative, I shall tell you that story from the Upanishad. The title of the chapter there is Maunam Brahma, which means God is silent. Maunam Brahma. One time, there are four young people who were very friendly to each other and who were inspired by the same spiritual idea. So as they got together and discussing things, they made a resolve. They thought that, well, we have first of all to find out a great teacher and try to have some authentic understanding of the nature of supreme truth, of Brahman. Brahman, you know, is the Sanskrit word for ultimate reality, infinite. So as they were thinking along that line, the name of the greatest teacher of the time in the country came to their mind. Yajnavalkya. And they decided to go to that great master for instruction, spiritual instruction. So traveling a long distance, they went to him, and with great reverence, they sat down in his presence. And then they asked the master. They said, well, we have come from a long distance. Would you kindly instruct us on the nature of Brahman? The master was silent. No answer, no talk. After a while, they repeated the question. But at that also, the master was silent. When for the third time they repeated the same question with all eagerness, with all their earnestness, then the master opened his mouth and he said, well, I have already replied to your question, because God is the great science, Mounam Brahma. It is by entering into the depth of silence of your being that you can realize Brahma. In other words, you see, he was now ready to instruct them in the technique, in the art of cultivating silence, entering into the depth of silence of one's own being and searching for God there. So I think that's a very beautiful story, bringing out this point which I am trying to make. God is the great science, and silence is illuminating. We find when we study the lives of some of the greatest men, greatest thinkers and greatest leaders of action of humanity, we find that they had an understanding of this fact. The other day I was reading a biography of Mahatma Gandhi. I think you know that he was a man of great action. He was in the political field, but at the same time, he was a very illuminated soul, a saint. Every now and then we find in his life that all kinds of political problems were pressing in upon him. Local politics, national politics, international politics, all the pressing problems. And once in a while we find that when the different problems, you know, make a very great impact upon him, he does not know what the solution is, he makes a point of retiring into silence. First of all, listening to different points of view, the viewpoints of the different parties and so on and so forth. And then, before coming to a decision himself, he would make a point of retiring into silence. Allowing all these different points of view to be absorbed in the unconscious. If I may be allowed to use the psychological expression here. They say allowing all these different points of view to be absorbed into the unconscious. Then you would retire into silence. Enter into silent communion. And then he testifies that after a period of such silent contemplation of the various problems, wonderfully enough, some inner light shines up. Because the light is there in every one of us. The light is there. In whatever way you try to understand that light, whether you call it the light of the infinite the light of the eternal, the light of God that dwells in your heart. In whatever way you understand it, the inner light, inner guidance is there. So if we know how to enter into the silence of our being, the inner light shines up, throwing light upon some of the most pressing problems of our life. So in solving problems of life, we find that this is very helpful. We all know how silence is recuperative. That is why nature has her method, you see, of silence in our life, so that we can recuperate. And what is nature's method? Very simple method, you know, but very mysterious, very strange. We don't pay much attention to that. That is the silence of sleep. Wonderfully recuperative. Eh? All day you work hard, go to office, deal with so many things, meet so many people, all kinds of sometimes conflicting forces pouring into your mind. Come back home, fatigued, tired, depressed maybe. Then you go to sleep, you go to bed, and fall asleep. And that is the miracle of cure. As you get up in the morning, you find refreshed, revitalized, a newborn individual, ready to start the day again with renewed vigor and energy. Is not that a miracle? That is the miracle of silence, the silence of sleep, during which period recuperation takes place, a process of revitalization, you see, sets in. Creative action takes place in silence. All creative action takes place in silence. It is when we are most silent, you know, when the mind falls absolutely silent, when we let go and relax, when our rational, little rational ego mind is not too much chattering, you see, it is there. At that moment of complete silence and relaxation, some of the most creative ideas flash forth in our mind. So it is creative. Silence is creative. That is why we find all creative individuals, creative thinkers, philosophers, scientists, artists, they have to have silent communion. They have to retire, to enter into the depth of silence. Otherwise, creation, authentic creation, original thinking, discovery is not possible. That is why the scientist must have silence in his laboratory. The artist must have silence in his studio. The mystic must have silence in his monastery. So on and so forth. That is a must for all creative thinking. That is a very significant Sanskrit expression which is called mantra gupti, which means the secret of silence in all serious endeavor. It is called mantra gupti. Tell you a story. Some time ago, this news appeared in one of the newspapers here. You all know about the great American thinker and writer, and novelist, Hemingway. So one time, a press correspondent had an interview with him, which appeared in the paper. So they were discussing, this man, this press correspondent, was discussing with Hemingway about his different books that are published, and the reviews of some of these books. And then he was inquiring about, you know, his schedule, his daily activities, and so on and so forth. Then he asked him this question. He says, "What is the book that you are writing now? In what book you are engaged now?" blunt he said anyway that I don't want to discuss about that.
You see, he viewed
that further, no further there. When that question was raised, you see, his attitude was no further. I mean, he did not want to discuss it. And then he explained. He says, well, I don't know the reason, but it is my experience that when I am engaged in writing a book, and if I have discussed with anybody about my plan before the book is complete, something goes wrong. Something goes wrong there. You see, I don't know why, I cannot explain it, but that is my experience. And that is why it is my principle now that when I am engaged in writing a book, I never discuss with anybody about that before I finish it, before it is ready to go to the press. This is called mantra bhukti. And this is a very good principle. When you undertake something noble, something serious, something original, something creative, it is a sound principle of life not to talk about it with people who cannot help you in any way in that matter. Well, you can talk with those who are, you see, who are working along with you, but who will understand, or whose help in some way you need, that's different. But otherwise, no. Don't discuss about it. For various reasons. One reason is that as you go on talking about an undertaking, about a plan, suppose you have made a plan about your spiritual schedule, your spiritual growth. You are going to meditate, you know, or study, so on and so forth. Don't go on talking about it. You have made a plan to write a book or to, you know, whatever it is. Don't go on talking about it. Why? Because as you do so, you dissipate some of your energy through talking. Whereas, had you not talked, the less you talk, the better, because in that way, you preserve that energy, and that energy is channeled, constructively channeled, toward your endeavor, your main work. Whereas by talking, some of that energy is diverted and is scattered. You see, you are not aware of this fact, but that happens to talking, especially irrelevant, unnecessary talking. We dissipate our energy. Another thing is, you see, when you are contemplating something noble, something great, when you start talking about it with other people, without your knowledge, there is an element of bragging, you see. There is an element of egotism that comes into the thought, you see, without our knowing about it. That is very bad too. You see, the more there is display through talking of this element of bragging or this ego, the more we undermine our main activity. So for various reasons, it is good to follow, it is, you know, very desirable to follow this principle of mantra bhukti. First finish the job, whatever you have in mind, finish it, accomplish it. Then, let your deed speak for itself. Let your actions, you see, our actions and deeds are more eloquent than our words. What is the use of talking? Accomplish something, let your accomplishment speak for itself and for you. And similarly, we may say that let our life speak for itself. What is the use of talking about, I have done this, I have done that, or I am going to do this? Let our life and action speak for itself. This one time I remember, a man went to Mahatma Gandhi and asked him that, you are now in the evening of your life, what is your final message? World? And he asked. And Gandhi at once replied by saying that my life is my message to the world. My life is my message. That's wonderful. And that is what everybody should have in mind. Our life has to be, you know, our message to the world. Another point. When, by living right and thinking right, and cultivating, you know, the power of silence, we accumulate creative energy within us. We can also communicate that to others, share that with others in a very silent way. But that is another very, you know, mysterious maybe, but very important and true fact. The silent method of communication. We find this illustrated in the lives of all great sages, great spiritual masters. We find that they have taught, instructed others more by the power of silence than in other ways. We find that when there is a great sage who is an illuminated person, a God-realized person, no, different people come from different places with a great hunger in their soul, with all kinds of questions. They come and take their seat in his presence. And as a result of just sitting silently in the presence of a master, we find that automatically some of the questions and problems seem to be solved from within. They receive something. This is silent communication. And when you have the power within you, you can communicate that in a silent way, just as a lamp radiates light, not with a bit of drums, but just spontaneously. The sun shines, and the flower gives out its perfume, spontaneously, silent. And so an illumined soul, illuminated soul, radiates light and peace and joy, silent. Those who come into the orbit of his influence, spontaneously, automatically, silently, receive that power, something of the perfume of spiritual illumination. Let me tell you an incident and give an example. You know, Paul Brunton, I think you have heard his name. No, the famous American journalist and writer. So he went to India in search of the spiritual truth. And then when he was one day walking along the street of Bombay, he met a person, a holy man, and there was a little conversation between them. And this fellow, this sadhu, this holy man, told Paul Brunton, he says, well, you have come to India, but perhaps you don't know what is your true mission here. You yourself don't know. And perhaps you also don't know who is going to help you in obtaining what you are seeking. And then he said that we have come here to India to meet the great sage of Arunachala, Raman Maharshi. We have to go there. Then Paul Brunton said, why? I have not even heard his name. And then he said, well, no, I cannot do that because I have already my reservation made. I am going to go to Agra. I am going to leave next evening, tomorrow night, you know, for Agra to see Taj Mahal and other things. So this sadhu then told him, all right, you have your reservation. I understand it. But I tell you that the main purpose of your coming here is to contact Raman Maharshi, and you better think of that. We have to go there. So you think about it. Tomorrow I shall come meet you again. I shall come to see you, and I should like to know whether you have changed your mind. So that made him think, that night he was seriously thinking about it. He's a very strange man. He says that he knows the mission of my life, which I don't know. So he was thinking about it, and next day he really changed his mind. When the sadhu came to see him again, he said, well, you have certainly scored your point. I am going with you. I am going to see your master, Raman Maharshi. So they went. Traveling the whole distance, you know, he went to Madras, and Raman Maharshi was in a very remote village. So going by all kinds of strange conveyance, you know, bullock cart and this and that. He went at last to Ramana Maharshi's ashram. Now, as he went there, many things appeared very strange to him, certainly. First of all, his ego was a little hurt because he found that, you know, this man already wrote to them that Paul Grantor would be coming, and so he thought that there would be a very right royal reception, you know. He's coming all the way from the United States and to the remote village of Madras, and so there would be a nice, you know, reception there and things like that. But he found nothing. Everybody was going his own way, you know. So nothing of that kind. So he felt a little badly about it. Then he was led by people to the meditation hall where Ramana Maharshi was seated. So the great sage Maharshi was seated at one place there, and then it was a big hall and different people were, you know, seated on the floor, and then they were all meditating. And the Maharshi also was sitting in absolute silence. There was no talk, no noise, nothing. Now as he entered into the meditation hall, he thought that, well, at least the master would now pay some attention to him. No, he was not paying attention to anybody. So pretty soon Paul Grantor found out, you know, you may read this account in his own words, Maharshi and his method. That is the name of the booklet in which he has related his experiences. So he found that Maharshi was not looking at anybody. He was just sitting there in silence, wrapped up within himself, his gaze fixed into eternity. Mm-hmm. And all were sitting there in great reverence. So the scene was a little puzzling to him. So he sat there and was trying his best to, you know, draw the attention. But without any success. So, you know, following the custom of the place, he was perhaps trying to meditate, trying to absorb the silence of the atmosphere. And then, as he testifies, that after a period of time, it seemed that a veil was lifted from his mind. The veil was lifted. A new dimension of existence began to be felt. Or he began to be aware of himself on a deeper level of personality. And that was the big change, a turning point in his life. His first experience of a new value of life, of a new dimension of existence. How did he have it? There was no talk, there was nothing. Just by sitting in that silent atmosphere. The atmosphere which was surcharged with the illuminating power of silence of that great sage. That is silent communication, which is a fact, not a fiction. Just the other day, this happened. Maharshi has testified it. I can tell you from my own experience about this kind of thing, which I have seen and experienced in Pondicherry. The great master there, Sri Aurobindo. Now, the custom there in Pondicherry was that there are only 4 days, you know, throughout the whole year. For example, 15th of August, 24th of November, 21st of February, you know, and 24th of April. The 4 days when people used to have the darshan of Sri Aurobindo. You know, that is to say, throughout the rest of the year they would not see him. You know, he was in his room, in his house, and busy, you know, engaged in meditation and spiritual work and study and writing and so on and so forth. On these 4 occasions, people would have a chance of seeing him, having his darshan, as we say, darshan. But that also was silent. 1,000 people, 1,200 people or more on that occasion would come, form a long queue, you know, long line. One after another, they would go into his room and stand in his presence, silently, pay respect, and pass, you know, come out silently. It was an absolutely silent affair. Now, not only on from my own experience, but from what I know of the experiences of other people, I tell you that this was a miraculous thing in the lives of so many people. Just going there, standing in the presence of that great master for at a minute, and silently come out. That was a tremendous impact in the life of the visitor. For that brief moment, there was the silent communication between the two souls, you see, and the contact, the dynamic contact of two souls in silence was a wonderful experience. Now these are facts, you know, but many people don't believe it or are not aware of it. The basic fact, the basic truth about it is that when we accumulate the power of silence, which is a creative, illuminating power within us, we can silently share it with others. We can enter into a very strange, silent communication with others on a deeper level of consciousness. All right. Now I shall tell you about some of the stages of our mind. Through what stages we go in our spiritual search, in more and more establishing silence in our being, and more developing the power of silence in our life. So let me start with the very beginning, and I shall tell you about some of these different stages, and I shall, in this account, I shall draw upon the Yoga Sutras of Patanjali, who is the great teacher of yoga, and also I shall draw upon the writings of Sri Aurobindo. This man. Now let us start with the beginning. Patanjali, the great teacher, tells us that the first condition of our mind, the very first condition, is what is called kshipta condition. That is to say, a diffused condition, scattered condition. We find people, and we also, every one of us, might, you know, perhaps there was a time when we felt like that, mind is too much scattered, we cannot concentrate, you know, on anything for a while. Mind is as it were jumping around all the time. So they gave the analogy of the monkey mind, mind like a monkey, all the time jumping from branch to branch of the tree of life. Now eating of this fruit, now eating of that fruit, now eating of that fruit. Some of these fruits are sour, some of these sweet, some of these bitter. But we cannot, you know, settle down anywhere, concentrate on anything for any good length of time. That is the kshipta condition of the mind. The next condition is, so it is just the other extreme, opposite of what we call silence, you know, opposite pole of silence. Silence is a separate condition of the mind, but this is the opposite, dissipated, scattered condition. Then is vikshipta condition. Vikshipta condition is a little better when we can concentrate for a while, but just for a while, not for long. For example, at this stage, you can take a book, you know, a good book, and you read perhaps one paragraph. But, well, as soon as you have finished perhaps one paragraph, your mind has gone to a television program, perhaps. Or, you know, or to the baseball, or to something else. You find yourself wandering. And then it takes a little time to bring it back again to the next paragraph. So this is the big shift of condition. Concentrate a little, but not much. Every now and then you find there are distractions. next condition is ekagra. they have power of concentration a little developed power of concentration. You see, in our different schemes of education, we try to do that, you know, from our childhood as we go through different education stages. We try to develop this power of concentration in whatever we do, whether reading book or receiving training in some particular field. We learn how to concentrate in doing a job, in achieving something. So that is, and the more we learn how to concentrate, the more we can focus our mental energy in a particular field, the more we can marshal, mobilize the resources of our mind, by virtue of which we begin to feel and apply great mental power. In other words, concentration is the mobilization of the powers of the mind, and that gives great strength. In meditation, we can develop this, in different ways. For example, as you meditate, you may start with, you may begin with concentrating on some particular interesting thing. Say, for example, you can take an image, image of an ocean, vast ocean. Try to concentrate, visualize the ocean, concentrate upon it. You can begin that way. Or perhaps you are a lover of mountain. So visualize, fix in your mind an image of a vast, beautiful, majestic mountain. Or perhaps a little flower. You are fond of flowers, perhaps. So think of concentrating your mind on a lovely flower. Or if you are, specially religious minded, you can concentrate on a particular religious figure, image of a great master, Buddha, or Christ, or Krishna, or something like that. So in all these different ways, we try to develop into a mind, into ekagra, concentrated condition. That is necessary. And so this is a big step, important step, in developing the power of silence. Next is udasi. Udasi. Udasino, in concentration, ekagra, you are putting forth effort. You are concentrated. There is a putting forth of effort there. As a result of the putting forth of effort, there is the intensification of your consciousness. So that is like, like converting an ordinary lamp into a searchlight. That is ekagra. In the case of an ordinary lamp, say a candle or a kerosene lamp, the rays of light are diffused in all directions. So there is illumination, but there is no penetration there. See? Diffused. But in the case of a torchlight or a searchlight, the rays of light are focused in one direction, as a result of which focusing, it gains penetrating power. So that is ekagra. Udasin is apparently a kind of different technique. Here, you relax. You let go your mind and body. Relax. Don't concentrate on anything in particular. If you have so often found that it is so difficult to concentrate, it is so difficult to bring your mind under control. So mind has been compared by some to a monkey and by some to a serpent. Mind has been compared to a serpent. It goes on moving in a serpentine way, very mischievous and treacherous. You see, you want something from it, you want it to do something, but every now and then it does just opposite. Serpentine. So that is the problem here. So what do you do? Udasin, the technique here, well, give this monkey mind a long rope with which it can hang itself. Give it a long rope. Let go. Don't fight with it. You see? see, the more you fight with it, try to interfere with it, you see, the more it feels fun, you know, it thinks that it is a lot of fun. I mean, it can hit you back. So, instead of doing it, give it along. Let it go. As you allow it to run its full course freely, eventually it exhausts itself. And then it comes automatically under your control. You see, that is the technique in Buddhism. So that is also a good step toward the silence. Relaxing, let it go. Observe it. You let go your mind, just let it play around. Bring up whatever it wants, think of whatever it wants. But just keep an eye open and observe it. You as it were, you let your mind go and play, do whatever it wants. You hold back, observe it in a detached way, without being identified with any of these activities of the mind. You just watch and observe, you know, and let it go. So this is giving it a long rope. And then it becomes exhausted. Then it comes under your control. So a great Indian master, you know, in discussing meditation said that it is like a snake charmer charming the snake. You see, he brings a big snake out of his basket and then he lets it go. He lets it go, gives it free play, but keeps his constant vigilant watch. He is watching all the time, the eyes of the snake. You see, and by watching he controls it. So watch this mind serpent and control it by watching without being identified with it. So that is called Udasi. Next one is quiet. See, now comes as a result of these practices. As you go through these practices, then you achieve what is called quiet. Quiet. No, these phases which I shall be discussing, you know, quiet, calm, peace and silence. I have discussed these points in my book here, page 83, you know, Sri Aurobindo, the Prophet of Life Divine, page 83. I have discussed these different stages which I am going to explain to you now. Quiet, calm, you know, peace and silence. And Sri Aurobindo in his Basis of Yoga has discussed these too. So, what's up there? You are thinking. Quiet. What is that? Now, as a result of this practice, you have your first experience of silence. Quiet. Your mind experiences quiet. In other words, before it was a kind of restless. Quiet here implies elimination of restlessness from the mind. You see, there was an element of restlessness in your mind. It was jumping around. But as a result of the previous practices, it now becomes, comparatively speaking, quiet. Restlessness is gone. It is eliminated in a large measure. But this is the beginning of silence. Quiet is the beginning of silence. Even though the native restlessness is eliminated now, still, you see, it is likely to be disturbed from within or from without. You are quiet now. In other words, you are not restless anymore yourself. A little disturbance outside may break that, you know, quiet. You know, you hear a noise in the street, some boy is shouting, you see, or a particular automobile is honking too much. So you feel disturbed, upset now. I mean, you know, quiet is gone. So you have this quiet, which means inner native restlessness is gone. But disturbance may come from outside. You see, disturbance may come from inside also. In other words, you are quiet, mind is rested. But still, suddenly, you see, something comes from your unconscious mind. A memory, perhaps. A particular memory comes from your unconscious mind and disturbs your mental quiet. So you see, disturbance may come from both these sources, inside and outside, unconscious region and the external environment. So next condition is, therefore, calm. We say calm down, eh? When you say calm down, that means these elements of distraction and disquiet and conflict now are also eliminated. So that is the calm condition. When you attain at this calmness, you may hear a noise outside, but that is not disturbed. You see, your silence has been so much solidified within you. It has become massive, solidified, that you hear a disturbance, no noise, that does bother. Similarly, some memory may come, some disturbing thought may come from inside. That also does not bother you anymore. You just look at it, that's all. It vanishes. You see? So when you have this calmness, an idea comes, a disturbing element or thought comes, it comes, fine, you look at it. As you look at it, it vanishes. So that is calmness. The solidified condition of quiet. So it is, Sri Aurobindo says, this is the more positive condition. When the mind has become so still that disturbances or distractions don't bother it anymore. Next is peace, shanti. As a result of this fact of calmness, freedom from conflict, distraction, disturbance, as a result of that, a more positive level is attained. Namely, your awareness of the inner self, which is the unifying, harmonizing principle of your existence. That which is called Atman, self, soul, particular name you give. So, as a result of this calmness, you have this peace, which is more positive, as I say, because you become aware on a deeper level of your being of this positive reality, spiritual principle, Atma, which is the unifying principle, harmonizing principle. And so, with peace comes the sense of harmony, inner harmony. So that is, as you can see, a very more positive condition. And then after that is a still more positive condition, which is silence. Silence. Nirovata. Nirovata. Which is still more silent. Why? Why is it still more silent, still more positive? Because this is just a short step from peace, from peace to silence. In peace, we have the awareness of your inmost spiritual reality, which is harmonized, unified. Through that, you know, our self is our avenue of approach to God, to the Absolute. As you know the self, you enter into communion with the Divine. That is your way of approach. That is your point of contact with the Infinite. And naturally, therefore, from this is the next inevitable state or achievement, gate, that is silence. When you enter into silent communication with the Absolute, with the Infinite, that inner channel of communication is open now. Your mind has become so silent that the inner door is open. The spiritual door of the Infinite is open. You enter into communication with that. As a result of your entry into communion, silent communion with the Infinite, the Eternal, or the Absolute, you gain a new profound experience. The experience of the inner flow of indescribable joy or bliss, as a result of which your whole being is flooded with the light and joy and love of the Infinite. So that is the positive content of silence. In this sense of the word. So in this, in achieving this silence, we have this positive experience of being in the loving embrace of God, as it were, if I may put it like that. You are feeling yourself, experiencing yourself in the loving embrace of God. The inner door is open, and there is a free flow of joy and peace and love and light from the Absolute. One word more and I shall finish.
Sri Aurobindo tells us in his Integral Yoga,
in some of his writings, that this silence, again, can be of two types, static and dynamic. Static silence means through this profound silence you enter into communion with the infinite, and as you do so you more and more enter deeply into the depth of the infinite. You want to abide more and more or permanently in the incomprehensible transcendental peace of the Absolute. So that is static. Dynamic silence is a more wonderful achievement, more balanced achievement, spiritual achievement. In dynamic silence, on the one hand, you enter into silent communion with the infinite. That is your spiritual achievement. On the other hand, you offer your whole instrumental being, your mind, your body, the powers of the mind, your senses, as a channel of expression of the creative energy of the action. So that is this, twofold idea in dynamic silence. In dynamic silence, let me repeat that again, and it is worth repeating. On the one hand, inwardly, we enter into silent communion with the infinite. On the other hand, we allow the creative power of God to flow freely through our mind and body, our senses. As a result of which fact, our whole being becomes now dynamic, creative. It is not exclusive of the world, of society, of our living. In this world, it is inclusive of the whole of life. As a result of your achievement of this dynamic silence, when you come out of meditation, you look at this world in a new significance, clothed in a new significance. You deal with people, you go to your office and work there, or in whatever area it may be, you do actions. You deal with people, you do carry on your thinking and feeling and so on and so forth as a transmuted instrument in the hands of God. Inwardly, that is the experience of profound silence. Outwardly, that is the performance of activities as an instrument of the divine. As you go through the different activities of life, these activities don't disturb anymore your inward silence. So that is dynamic silence. You see, silence which is established in the midst of all activities which are performed for the glory of God. It is called dynamic silence because it is the kind of silence which becomes a source of inspiration to the different activities of life and refuses to be disturbed by the different activities. And that is the goal of what we call integral yoga, purna yoga, and which in my view is the most balanced spiritual idea of life. Let us now meditate.